I'm feeling older.
Yeah, feeling like an old man.
I am.
Getting some gray hair going.
Something like that.
Mark the soon-to-be silver fox.
Yes. Yes, I turned 25 last weekend, and it feels weird. But hey, the first time I rent a rental car, whenever that happens, will now be less expensive than it would have been otherwise. That's about all I can say for that.
Yeah. Hip, hip, hoorah.
Yeah, but I have to say, I had a very good birthday. I had mentioned a couple times over the past few weeks my desire to try and make a fun day out of it. Mm-hmm. And things just sort of came together quite nicely. I brought Aaron disc golfing with me at the course that I go to, and that was fun. I gave myself a couple of extra shots as I normally do, and maybe in some cases, in one particular hole, maybe I would not have given myself the birdie that I ended up giving myself. But I tried to be relatively fair throughout the whole experience, and technically, according to my scorecard, shot my best ever round by one shot.
Hey,
nice. So that was good. And then we went to a baseball game. I had upgraded our tickets from our typical season ticket position of the top level behind home plate, which is a very good vantage point. And that's very fun, but I decided, you know what, let's do something a little different. So I got us tickets about six rows up down the right field line. So very different viewpoint, but it feels almost more, Aaron described it as, it just feels more real because the players look more real. It doesn't look like you're watching it on, a virtual reality television, which is what you feel like up on the third deck. In like, no, you can't see any people. You can't see any features. You know, you could see everything very well, but it's not different from watching on a TV other than the fact that you're in the stadium.
Okay.
I don't know. It's hard to describe, but
I would disagree with that. Beers at home are not $11, but.
Well, you know what I mean. the spirit of what I'm saying is true.
Yes.
And so being down there was really fun. And also I specifically, I was like, it would also be fun to be somewhere where there's even a hope of, getting a ball, like a foul ball. So let's bring gloves. God. We haven't done that before. So it's just fun to have that experience. And so we get there and, like I said, we're about six rows back. We're just kind of there. It's not super crowded around us. There are people around, but it's not super crowded. But there's a guy and a girl who seem like they're probably dating behind us. And they're a bit younger than us. Erin said that at some point she heard them talking about something related to them likely being in high school. So they're definitely a bit younger than us. The guy was talking about everything to do with the game. And the girl was very, very nice and patient and asking questions and stuff in our opinion, to just sort of let him have his fun. When you know someone who wants to go on a lot about something, you just kind of let them and it's fine.
Uh-huh.
But we're sitting there hearing all of it because he's very loud and they're immediately behind us.
Uh-huh.
So they're talking about that. They're also, excited about the seats that they have because they're good seats. And, we're seeing, just all the action happen. It feels like pretty close up. Yeah. Sometime around the fourth or fifth inning, they get up and leave to go get some food. And in the intervening inning, a foul ball comes rocketing, curving immediately to where they were sitting. And I reach back and successfully catch it.
No!
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the mic clipped real bad, I bet.
That's all right. It happens in every episode with you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was fun. It was like, it was one of those experiences of like, it maybe would have been more exciting if I were still actually a little kid.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of be in that moment. For me, I don't know, like, despite having watched people catch foul balls at the stadium a lot, knowing that I had made a pretty good catch and, like, you know, it didn't bounce. That's the main measure of whether the crowd will cheer for you is if the ball hits the ground at all. It did not. You know, yeah. I leaned back and tracked it all the way and caught it without really a problem. And
in my first with the glove,
in my what? Oh yeah. Okay. If I didn't have a glove, I maybe would have gone for it with my hat, but it would have been much less likely that I would have caught it.
Yeah.
So I got it with my glove. And you know, and I assume, you know, the people immediately around me were talking to me about it and were very clearly jazzed about the whole thing. I assume the crowd did something like the broader crowd, but I didn't actually really notice. It was like, for whatever reason, I suppose it just speaks to my personality. I caught it and I told Aaron afterward that I had been, you know, for the first four innings, just sitting there rehearsing in my mind, what would I do if I caught a ball? Like, what would the experience of it coming towards me be like? Would I end up being kind of like, oh my God, like this is a stressful few seconds as I can tell that this ball is heading towards me? Or are my instincts just going to kick in? In terms of, like, I've played baseball for, you know, 20 years, and it's just routine. It turns out it was the second thing. So I, you know, it felt so routine to me once I knew that it was coming. It was like, yep, I still know how to catch a fly ball like this, that I just caught it, and then I just immediately sat down. Most people, like, wave their hand and get super excited with the crowd. Like, yeah, look at this catch I made. And I just, like, I caught it, and then I just kind of, like, sat in my seat. And then as people around me were like, oh, wow, that was so cool. And I just kind of smiled and nodded and was like, yeah, that was really awesome. And like,
as I compliment myself.
Well, not even, I wasn't even saying that. I didn't even say that. That's like more enthusiasm than I probably even had. And Aaron was like concerned, like, she's like, are you excited that you caught that? I'm like, well, like, yeah, I'm excited, but like, I don't know. It's, I'm surrounded by a bunch of people. Like, I'm happy that it happened. But, you know, I didn't feel like I did anything amazing. You know, I got lucky and I caught a ball.
Where are your emotions, Mark? Come on.
But, yeah, so now I have a baseball, the first one that I've ever actually caught at a game. So that's fun. And Aaron bought me a display case off of Etsy, I think, for it that she's going to have, you know, it's going to have, like, a little engraving about, you know, who hit it and where it was and all that sort of stuff. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, pretty happy with how, I'm pretty pleased with how the day went overall.
That's awesome. So what I understand is there are no like little kids around, right?
Not close enough for me to feel obligated to pass it along.
Obligated? Come on, Mark.
What?
You're supposed to say, oh, they're so far it'd have been awkward to give it to them.
Well, in either case, my point still stands.
Yeah. Did the young couple come back?
Oh, ever? Yeah. And immediately, so there were a couple of guys sitting right next to us who were also pretty young and pretty excitable. And they were super jazzed about the whole thing. They're like, oh my God, that was such a cool catch. You know, and one of them also had his glove and his friend was getting on his case like, man, you could have caught that. You know, because of where it was. And it's like, well, maybe, but the angle of it was such that it was probably 10 feet above him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once it makes it four more seats over, it has dropped so far that it was very easy for me to catch. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of lucky. And so, yeah, when this young couple came back, the two guys sitting next to us immediately were like, a foul ball came right there, right to you guys. And this guy caught it. So it was pretty funny.
Stone cold.
Yeah. They were fine. You know, they were, the guy was probably a little bummed, but he knows that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah. They didn't like demand the baseball because it was coming towards their seat.
Yeah, exactly. So it was fun.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's super exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was a good birthday, I would say. And then, good.
Oh, no, you can keep going if you got more stories about your birthday.
No, I don't.
Well, I was going to say, being you brought a wonderful story about catching something at a baseball game.
Hmm.
I probably have told you this story before, and if I haven't, I'm very sorry. But I feel like I just followed up with, like, not to be a one-upper or anything, but my story of, like, me catching something at a baseball game.
Okay. Was this, I have to ask, because the only reason that I can think that you would have asked this is if this was, I feel like you did tell me about a White Sox game that you went to related to work.
Yeah, let's hope that all listeners have forgotten about that story then.
I don't remember what it was. I just remember you telling me that you went to this baseball game. You probably did tell me, but you can tell me again.
Yeah, so I got tickets to go to a White Sox baseball game through work. And it was like real, it was a few years ago. It was real early in the season and they were like doing horrifically and it was like raining. And so there was no one there. There were probably less than 2,000 fans at the start of the game, I'm going to say, and like less than 1,000 by like inning six.
Awesome.
Like it was a bizarre experience because of how empty the stadium was.
Sure.
And I'd never been to the stadium. So it was actually great because it was like super easy to explore. And like we had nice tickets on like the, like, I don't know what it's called, like the special like box level that you like only like people with the special tickets can get into that level, you know? Like it's not boxes, but like whatever, like Legends Club or whatever the heck they call
it. Yeah, yeah. They have a similar thing at Target Field where it's like the Delta 360 Sky. I don't remember what it is, but yeah, it's like the food is, there's no suites, but the food is better and the seats are a little nicer and you can tell that you're just in a cooler spot.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like we were sitting there and it was great, but it was like five innings in, it's like we're going to go explore a little bit and like, also there's like no one here and like we're the people sitting the furthest up in the stadium, I swear. Cause like we're not on like one, like the next level up from the lower deck and everything. So we go and explore and it's like, okay, yeah, the ushers didn't care. They're going to let you sit wherever you want as long as it's not like right behind home plate. Mm-hmm. So you can go down and sit like a few rows, like, so we went down and grabbed some seats, like, I don't know, 5-10 rows back, like right off first base or something. And then I think it was like at the seventh inning stretch, they come around and they're like one of those, like they shoot t-shirts into the crowd sort of thing.
Okay.
And I've never like won something at one of those things or like caught something or whatever. And like it was pretty empty, so I was like, yo, we could like get something. And so like we're like cheering and yelling, we're probably some of the louder people there. And so like dude lobs one, like throws it like real high up, so it's coming down on you and it's like it's coming straight for me and I'm like excited because I'm gonna catch it. And it's gonna be like the first time ever, and like I had to move like a few seats over, so I'm like shuffling over a little bit in the aisle to catch it, but like it's coming straight towards me and there's no one else around, it's gonna be mine. And I go to put my hands up and I'm a little bit late and all of a sudden the t-shirt smacks me in the face. It was not a good catch.
Yeah
Not at all.
Well, this is what had been running through my mind, was the closest I've ever been to catching a baseball game at a Major League Baseball stadium. Did I say catching a baseball game?
Yeah, you were catching a baseball game at the stadium. Gosh. Like, you were seeing the game at the stadium, and there was a ball, brain. I'm guessing.
So the closest I ever got to catching a baseball at a baseball game or at a Major League Baseball stadium in general was back when they used to let you in during batting practice. If you got there early enough. Yeah. And so I had done that. This was, I think, in college. I had convinced my dad to go early enough so that we could finally do this, because I wanted to do this for years. And it's a free-for-all. You know, not many people are there. You just go hang out in left field, and inevitably some home runs are going to come flying towards you.
Yeah.
And sure enough, one came in, and it was probably, you know, 8-ish seats away from where I just happened to be hanging out. And it came rocketing in so fast that I'm thinking, I have no clue how people reach their hands out for this. And even if I had a glove, this was fast enough that it felt a little scary for me, who has played baseball for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what was in my head at this game this past weekend, was, am I going to chicken out or like do something dumb if a ball come towards me because of that one sole memory of actually being that close to a Major League Baseball coming towards me. So luckily the way that stadiums have been laid out for the past, I think, 2 years, where the netting has now expanded mm-hmm. to go all the way down the foul lines for the most part, yeah. any ball that's coming towards you is on a nice high arc, and it is just yeah. catching a pop-up. Unless you're, you know, in the sort of second deck area like you are, and a foul ball could come rocketing up on a line drive right at you. but that was not where I was, so. Yeah, the face shot with the t-shirt, that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
I'm sure it looked real cool.
Hey, thankfully there's enough else going on that not many people saw.
Enough going on with 1,000 people total in the stadium?
Because, like, they had, like, four teams throwing t-shirts.
Oh, okay.
And so it was like, if you evenly divides everyone's attention, which it certainly wasn't, I was not the most interesting thing going on, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, max, there were, like, maybe 200 people that saw me. It's like, I can live with that.
Yeah.
There's 200 people that I'm never going to see again, like, meh.
Fair enough.
But.
Well, yeah. What I do want to do is, at some point, go back through MLB TV and see if I can somehow manage to find some camera shot of me catching it, because sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
On the main broadcast, I told my dad when it had happened, and he more or less confirmed that it didn't make it into the main broadcast, but there might be other ways that I can hunt down with the right tools to maybe get something. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That would be cool to have a little souvenir.
Yeah.
Well, second little souvenir to go exactly. with your first souvenir. But
exactly.
You want to know the worst thing about my whole t-shirt fiasco?
Hmm.
It's a freaking extra large.
Oh, yeah, it always is. It's always some ridiculous... I mean, extra large is almost nice. I've definitely gotten souvenir shirts that are like double XLs or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
I don't even think I still have it. I think I might have gotten rid of it. I think I donated it because I was just like, yeah, I don't want to lug this around. Like, it'd be fun to have, but...
Uh-huh. Yeah, at the game this weekend, we got there early enough that they were still passing out shirts, and they were the... just like at the gate as a promotional thing. And they were the sort of, they called them like raglan or something like that. I'm not sure, but the sort of like 3/4 long sleeve where the sleeve is a different color from the main shirt. And the sleeve is a little baggy, you know, there's not really a cuff or anything that style shirt.
I love those shirts. I don't have a single one, but I love them.
Yeah. But these are also extra large. And they're like, They kind of fit me, but it's a little big for me now, and they're kind of like pajamas on Aaron.
Yeah.
So we'll find some use for them. If it's like, oh, hey, Grant's visiting, and he wants to go to a baseball game, here's a shirt that he can wear. you know,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, let's make him
look ridiculous. Make look like he's wearing a smock.
Yeah, let's throw Grant in an XL so he doesn't have to wear pants. He can put on like a big chunky belt to tie the outfit together.
That's right. You'll look like a teenager lifting weights in a 90s PE video.
Oh, that was a more nice description than I was expecting.
That's just whenever I think of that, whenever I think of baggy shirts and a weird belt around the shirt, that's what I think of are all the PE videos about how to like weight train properly without hurting yourself.
Yeah.
And it's always some ripped kid from the 90s with a, like a, you know, the belt is like 6 inches wide or tall, I suppose, you know?
Yeah. What is the purpose of those belts? Do you know? Is it to like help you like keep your back?
I think it's a core stability thing so that you're not bending your lower back while lifting.
Okay. So that you don't like hurt your back, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Interesting.
I just think that we have improved technology in terms of body compression materials that nobody needs to wear those anymore. And
really?
We have stuff
you
that's
think?
A bit more. Well, yeah, I'm sure that people who work in like even something like a warehouse kind of work where you're doing a lot of manual lifting like that, I'm sure they just have better compression, like almost like a compression sleeve for your elbow, like a lot of people wear. Something that would be like a compression sleeve for your whole torso. That's specifically meant to do something like that.
I feel like I've seen them, but they're still like more of like a wide belt, and they're not, they're, because like they have to be laced up still or something.
Well, I don't know. In either case, I feel like people aren't wearing them outside their clothes as much either way. I have a feeling they're probably a bit more discreet.
Yeah. And they probably definitely have more discreet ones for, like, I'm guessing these days companies where people are, like, lifting a lot, they probably, like, pay for some nice fancy ones for, like, worker safety reasons.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I'm sure that they offer a wholesale purchase price out of your first paycheck. Like, that's what you could do when I worked at Applebee's, is they could say you have to get non-slip shoes, and one option is to buy through our, like, standard people that we partner with, and it'll just come out of your first paycheck.
Maybe.
So that's where, like, that bias comes from.
I think it depends on the company, because my bias comes from where I've worked, and they've had programs where it's like, oh yeah, we'll pay for what, like, if you need special shoes or something, we'll pay for up to like $150 or something.
I understand that, but also your line of work is a lot different.
Yeah, but like, if you got a good company that, like,
All those good logistics companies that care about their employees.
Maybe.
Well, maybe there are a few. Maybe that's why DHL is still there, is just because they're super good to their employees. I don't know.
Could be. Isn't it because DHL, like, does all the crazy freaking deliveries? Like,
maybe. I don't know. I don't know much about DHL other than the color of their trucks.
I don't know. I feel like the only thing that I'm aware of them for is, like, not insane deliveries, but like deliveries to like remote places of the world that you wouldn't think anyone would deliver to.
Mm-hmm. That does sound right. I think I have heard that.
Like, to, I don't know, like remote, like Mongolia or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
it's cost effective for them because nobody else is doing it to try and make it cost effective.
Yeah.
Grant has brought Frank and Ernest by Thaves. We have a lady standing on a sort of, is this technically a parapet? I don't actually know what a parapet is, but that's the word that comes to mind. It's a sort of stone ledge balcony situation off of a stone castle, presumably, like a column of a castle. And the title of the comic is a little scroll. It says, Untold Love Stories. And beneath the scroll, The Invisible Man and Juliet. And so now we realize this is Juliet, much older than the real Juliet would be, but that's okay. Juliet standing on a balcony saying, Wherefore art thou? And a speech bubble from right behind her, where nobody appears to be, says, Right here.
What a classic story. What a classic.
A lot would be different in Romeo and Juliet if Romeo were the Invisible Man. He definitely would not have gotten into quite so many duels as I remember happening in Romeo and Juliet.
I don't know. He was enough of a little scamp. Yeah, we'll go with scamp. Yeah, that's a better word that won't make more work for you. He's enough of a little scamp that I feel like he probably would have just like done it for funsies just to be a little saucy boy.
Well, that's more like guerrilla warfare than like a proper duel.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. I don't know. Sorry, the fly is circling my head right now and it's really annoying.
Oh. That's okay.
There is a fly in my room, listeners, if you are confused about what the comment I just made. Yes. No. Anyway, so I brought this comic because I recently stumbled into a YouTube hole. Or is there a better phrase or word for what I'm thinking of? Like a YouTube...
I would probably prepend hole with rabbit. And that's typically the phrase that people would use.
Yes. A YouTube rabbit hole. There we go. Not a YouTube hole. No, I bought a nice new shovel and I made a big YouTube hole. So I go and sit down there and when I watch YouTube videos in my backyard. But I fell into a YouTube rabbit hole of, I don't remember what the channel is called. It's like explanations of either historical events, historical periods, or historical narratives and stories. So like they have like tons of videos on like, oh, all of the like Greek gods and like Roman myths and like Norse mythology and like all that jazz. And so I've been recently learning about or hearing kind of summaries of a lot of these stories, and it's just got me thinking about like old stories or like stories that have survived the test of time and like are still around and people hear about. And I feel like Shakespeare is one of those, kind of maybe a genre, not a genre, a set of works that will survive for a while because people think it's special. But I was just thinking, do you have any say ancient stories that stick in your mind that you really remember? Because I've had lots where it's like I'm hearing things about like characters that I'm aware of, like I know who like Persephone is, but I'm like clearly not aware of like a lot of the like stories and mythos that surround Persephone I'd learned.
Yeah, that's interesting. So in terms of, let's call it, Western, commonly like taught in school kind of mythology, so Greek and Roman mythology, I know as much as you, I would assume, or in terms of like we're on the same order of magnitude of knowledge, as opposed to Aaron, who took the mythology class in high school and also an elective mythology class in college, knows a lot more. She's very intrigued by that sort of stuff and has a good foundation of knowledge there. So in that regard, not much. And in fact, most mythologies I don't know much about in general, mostly just because it's never been the thing specifically that grabbed me. In terms of fantasy type of things, what the main thing that I remember being really invested in as a kid, at least, were fantastical animals and creatures. And I think I feel like I must have mentioned this, that I have a book still back in Minnesota that I got at Barnes & Noble as an elementary schooler, that was the Encyclopedia of Mythical and Magical Creatures.
What? I didn't know you had this.
Yes, and you can read all about the various versions of, let's say, Bigfoot that are around the world. And just any other number of things, as well as mythological versions and views of common animals today from history. So you can learn about the, you know, chupacabra, you can also learn about how, like, I'm trying to think of an example, like various snakes or common birds that today we don't think of as anything, but historically have had very strong mythology around them in some parts of the world. And I was always fascinated by that.
Yeah.
So that's still something that, even though I have obviously lost touch with my desire to be a sort of cryptozoologist, you know, and when I first learned that the Loch Ness Monster likely doesn't actually exist, a certain magic left my life, but that's the specific like realm of things that always intrigued me, and I didn't much care where they were from. It was the animal part. There was not a specific mythology or even stories that really grabbed me. And in terms of like current knowledge and stuff, you know, what it gets tricky in terms of what you define as mythology versus something else, but let's just call them in general like biblical stories. I'm no expert by any means. There's lots and lots and lots of people who I've met and worked with in my life who have a much better knowledge of a lot of stuff, but I'm not a slouch. I know the main ones a fair bit. So, and that just comes with the fact that, you know, I was raised with that. I worked as a Bible camp counselor. So if you didn't already know a bunch of stuff, you obviously will pick it up pretty quickly. So yeah, I feel like those are the two main, let's call it, let's call it mythological slash historical kind of stuff that I have some knowledge of.
So for me, one of the things, as I have been watching a lot of these videos and learning more, it's kind of become well aware to me, and maybe this is more of a academically debated thing, but how a lot of the mythological characters, like viewing them in a, I don't know if it's more of like a anthropological context of how the characters evolved over time, because the stories that we know about them are often coming from an oral tradition, and the stories that we know are the ones that were specifically chosen by somebody to write down. And so like a lot of them were really, like, historically speaking, came from like, oh, the blending of cultures together. And so like these two cultures merged, and like they both had a god who did similar things, and they kind of became the same person and like slowly merged together over time. And so that's why, like, they have these weird characteristics that don't seem to go together and stuff like that. And so that's been, like, something really interesting for me to hear about, because I've never viewed, like, any of these mythical beings from that way before. I have always viewed them as, like, oh, yeah, they're just static stories. Like, yeah, like, Zeus has got freaking lightning bolts and he's the king of the gods or whatever. But it never really occurred to me that he was a character that, like, evolved over time. And, like, at one point in history, at least from the best of our understanding, like, Zeus didn't exist. Poseidon was the king of the gods. And I was just like, oh, I had no idea. Or maybe that's more debated. I don't know. I'm not informed enough about this to talk about it in this context. But, like, I don't know. I feel like it's one of those things that when I first learned about it in school or, like, heard about it, I just accepted it as some static thing that was unchanging, when really it's much more complicated than that. And I don't know, I enjoy that complication. I feel like it's cool. Like, I don't want to have to, like, learn, like, figure it out myself, but I enjoy having it spoon-fed to me.
Well, and yeah, I think to broaden this conversation beyond mythology, what you're really talking about is this sort of nature of history as well, in terms of how our knowledge of the past evolves, and also how knowledge in general has evolved in a long way over time. Like, but particularly when it comes to just history, right? Everything that we learn, there's certain accepted facts that get passed along for a very long time. And then eventually someone comes around and is like, but, like, wait, what happens if I actually trace this back? And then you wind up with very interesting results. In terms of mythology, this is total news to me as well. It doesn't surprise me. It makes sense, right, that where we are now is the culmination of a lot of development. It was not just, you know, Zeus was Zeus for thousands upon thousands of years, and then that eventually got written down, and then now we know about it now, right? That is never how any of this works. And so my sort of version of that, that's always very interesting to me, and again, I'm not hunting down these facts on my own, but I am reading stuff related to it, is math history. And how certain bits of knowledge adapt and change over time, and also how attribution changes over time.
Yes, that's a big one for sure.
So a book that I started and I haven't quite finished is a book, a really good book called The Cult of Pythagoras. And it's basically a book all about Pythagoras didn't do anything. Like, that's kind of the main thrust of this person's book is, Not only can we not safely attribute anything to Pythagoras, it's highly likely that he didn't do any mathematics of any novelty at all ever. And if you really go trace back everything, it's always like it always ends up being some sort of hearsay and or something, just some attribution appears out of nowhere for no good reason.
Yeah.
And that happens, I'm sure every field of study can trace its history that way, and it just so happens that math history is the one that obviously I really enjoy. And it's fascinating to me to see how that knowledge evolves as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
But I like the mythology part as well, because there's two parts to it. There's the, in a particular culture, what we know about them now is obviously a sort of unknown or a known result of an unknown process of how mm-hmm. we got there. And we may be able to get hints about a couple of steps in that process, like you were mentioning, whatever the deal is with Poseidon, maybe being a main guy without any interference from Zeus at some point in the process. You know, we can get snapshots of this and try and piece it together. But also with mythology, because there's such a commonality to it, is comparing it across cultures. Even at the point where we ended up, let alone different points along the way, like how did we end up with, you know, Roman and Greek mythology as it is? And then you add in things like Norse mythology, and how does that compare? And so on and so forth. Like, you kind of keep branching out and seeing how those all compare favorably or not is also really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Quick, tell me about Democritus, your chemistry.
Oh, freak, I don't know. Don't ask me. Is Democritus... Who the frick is Democritus? Is he the one who first proposed the atom?
Yeah, I think so.
The indivisible particle, if I remember right.
Yeah.
For a second, when you said Democritus, I thought you were talking about... what's the freaking god of wine? Dionysus? Dionysus. There we go. I knew I was close. It started with a D and had an is in it. That's not close. But yeah, no, but Democritus. The other thing that has come up in some of these videos that, like, okay, cut this out if you want, but it was like things about, we'll say, institutions that most people today think are like, no, this is how it's like done because of reasons. They don't think about like the reasons that it's done that way. For example, like choosing the Pope, and like that there's historical context for that. Historically speaking, there's pretty strong evidence that they don't have like the conclave or whatever with like the smoke and stuff because God like set this out. There's strong historical evidence for like, oh, this happens because there's a lot of disagreement and nobody agreed on who it should be, and so they thought they should have a method, so they decided on this one because they wanted secret ballots because someone started like killing people or something to make sure they got voted for, or bribing people or something. I don't know. But
I mean, I think the main takeaway is everything that you learn in school is the result of a very, very long process continues to go on. And I assume that what you were about to say was some snarky comment about it all being a lie or something like that.
I said, I was thinking wrong, but...
Or wrong, whatever.
Everything that you learn in school is a lie. It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's all a simplification of the truth.
Yeah, but
which
again...
Which isn't bad.
But it's not even saying a simplification of the truth, but it's just like, it's a part of an unattainable truth that we continue to chase. And as you grow older, if you decide to learn more about some topics, you learn more and more about, you know, hopefully you're getting closer to what could be considered the truth, but you're never going to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception of certain parts of mathematics, probably, but that's beside the point.
Oh, yeah, because math is special. Uh-huh.
It
You're
is
so right, Mark. It's getting to that time, so I think we should probably get moving here. So I'm going to move on to Nothing Is Not Something by Greg Wallace. That's hilarious because I just watched a video this afternoon or after work today about Henry Wallace? Is that his name? The Braveheart dude or whatever?
William Wallace?
There we go. I knew it ended in Wallace.
Henry Wallace.
Sorry, I work with someone named Henry, and it's funny that I call him Henry, though, because it's... Anyway, we'll this is totally unimportant, and I'm making this into a whole Grant story. So we got Nothing Is Not Something by Greg Wallace, and we have a man who appears, we're going to say, very content with himself and what he chooses to eat, and he has this purple smear across his face surrounding his mouth. He has a spoon full of purple goop in one hand and an open can with purple goop in it labeled pie filling. And it's captioned, Donnie realizes that life is short and the crust just gets in the way. I'm gonna be honest, if somebody tried to pass me off straight pie filling in place of pie, that would be a freaking act of treason. That would be a betrayal of the top degree. I do not agree with this comic whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Crust is a critical element of a pie. Without the crust, pie is crap. And I love pie. Like, I mm-hmm. am passionate about pie. I'm getting, like, way more emotional right now than I should about pie. It's kind of concerning me, myself.
Well, but you can
Greg, you are a fool.
You can rest easy knowing that I agree with you.
Good.
I agree that this is an abomination.
Yeah.
However, I'm curious if you perform any similar acts that that you think would almost certainly be described as an abomination by others. What food crimes does Grant commit?
I hate you so much for making me talk about this. I commit all the food crimes other than this one. Like if there is a spread intended to go on bread other than butter, I have eaten it plain with a spoon from the container. Peanut butter, Nutella.
Man, we're not even gonna say okay, well, that's good.
Oh,
at least
God. Thank God. No, we won't get into that story.
You don't like just having a scrambled mayonnaise for breakfast?
Gross, that's horrific. No. We've got peanut butter, Nutella. If we expand it past bread, I've eaten an entire jar of lemon curd, just like straight.
Mm-hmm. I remember that story.
Yeah. Definitely done frosting.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, the Trader Joe's cookie butter spread stuff. Honestly, that stuff's not very good. I don't like it. But I still ate it all from the jar pretty much straight with a spoon.
Uh-huh.
What other things do I do that's just, like, blasphemous food-wise? I don't know. Those are the big ones that pop into my head just because, like, it's a filling stored in a container that's kind of, like, shaped like a can.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there's others. Oh, ooh, eating dry ramen noodles. I love dry ramen noodles. I've had people think that's horrific. Like, you uh-huh. crush them up a little bit and sprinkle the seasoning on it. It's like chips.
Mm-hmm.
But ramen noodles.
Sure thing.
You've never done this?
No.
Oh my gosh, I thought that we were at the, maybe it was just like my elementary school, but like it was totally a thing in like third or fourth grade that it was like the most bomb snack. It was like a packet of ramen noodles dry.
I feel like, I thought we had talked about ramen before. My experience with ramen was the first time that I remember it even existing was when I was maybe in middle school, at late middle school, and my big sister would sometimes make it for herself in early to mid high school for herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had it then, and I never had ramen until maybe late in college. I'm not even sure if I had it in college. It may have been after I graduated and was living on my own that I finally had ramen for the first time, like the cheap packaged ramen. I mean, now I really like it. I don't eat it a lot, but I like it. But I wouldn't eat it dry, that's for sure.
It's just like a very different experience. And it's like...
Oh, I'm sure it is a very different experience. I just don't think it's one that I'd enjoy.
I would say anybody that likes eating like potato chips would love dry ramen.
Hmm. Well, I guess just add it to the list that we're not keeping track of ridiculous things we have to try when we're in person.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other blasphemous... I know I eat more blasphemous things, but... Mm-hmm. I don't have good ones popping into my head right now. Do you got any good ones that you eat?
I feel like nowadays I'm pretty down the middle. I mean, Aaron could probably come up with some, but I feel like I'm not that. I feel like I use all food for its intended purpose. I feel like most of my food crimes would be for, like, omitting things that most people would think are a requirement for something.
Mm.
Maybe that counts. Like, I would never put mayo on a BLT or really any sandwich of my own volition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I mean, you know, when I was growing up, I feel like I must have said this to you, but growing up, my favorite snack was ketchup and pizza Pringles.
I do remember that horrific fact now that you say it.
But I don't know. Most of these days, I feel like it's Erin committing the food crimes and me giving her a look because I just can't handle it.
Oh, wow.
But I won't put her on blast or anything specific. Well, and also because nice. They probably aren't actually that weird. They're just weird by my standard.
Yeah. Oh, so. You know what's a weird one that I've gotten some weird looks for is sauerkraut on breakfast foods. Like sauerkraut on like egg sandwiches or just like sauerkraut and eggs. I feel like people think that's real weird. I'll admit it's real weird, but it works. It works. I'll stand by that. I eat a lot of hot sauce on things that probably should. Like, I eat hot sauce a lot of the time like it's like salsa.
That's not that uncommon.
But, it's not like a food crime. It's just like a weird tolerance thing, I think.
Yeah.
More of.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's okay. It's not a food crime. But something that I really want to try that I've heard is a, like, one of those, like, bizarre but awesome pairings.
Uh-huh.
And I've been thinking about this for a year. I've been meaning to do this for a year. I need to do it this week. I'm putting it on my to-do list. Is bananas and pesto.
I think I'm just going to stop recording now.